Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free. So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com, register now. Join us. It will be accessible, it will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Hello, 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 and welcome. We are back again. Just a couple of housekeeping bits. I will be at a few of the IOFs coming up, IOF Northwest, IOF Northeast, IOF Scotland, maybe a couple others. So if you're at any of those, please do come and see me and say hello. But on with the show today. How did you get into fundraising? It is a question that we talk a lot about. And usually the answer people give is that they fell into fundraising. This seems to be a job that you can't necessarily train for, you can't necessarily learn about, or at least you used to not be able to. And yet there's a whole kind of set of unique skills that successful fundraisers seem to have. Now, somewhere in the midst of all that is the job application where people do go on to become a fundraiser. And one of the issues that's been cropping up more and more recently is the idea of the qualifications, the prerequisites of what makes a fundraiser. And one man who is trying to tackle one particular aspect of that is my guest today. No, it's not the budgies you can hear in the background. It is, in fact, David Burgess. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, David. How are you today?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad.
Thank you very much for joining me. That's very kind of you. Now you are, before I reveal your mission and the Twitter account that you're behind, because I'm not sure a lot of people know this, what is your actual paying day job? You are Apollo Fundraising.
Yeah, so I run a fundraising consultancy company for arts and culture organisations across the UK. So we provide consultancy, training and support. So I get to work with lots of really cool organisations, museums, theatre companies, musical festivals, musical charities, a really nice mix.
And you very much specialize in arts and culture in that area? I mean, you're all over, but that's your particular niche?
Yeah, so I did a music degree and a passion in music. And so I'm one of the people that fell into fundraising thinking I was going to do one thing, and then getting a chance to try fundraising when I was working in the office of an orchestra. And I just loved it, and I've stuck with it. So having spent most of my time fundraising for arts and culture charities, when it came to moving into consultancy, that sort of seemed the natural place for me to focus.
Nice. Well, I mean, I definitely want to talk more about your music career, or maybe the decision to abandon that music career. But in case people don't know it, you are the person behind the Twitter account, Non-Graduates Welcome.
Yes, yeah.
So what is Non-Graduates Welcome?
So it's a campaign to get organisations to think about why they're asking for most fundraising roles most applicants for fundraising roles to have a degree qualification. And I hadn't really noticed it before. It was only recently when I was doing some work for a client and I was reviewing a few job descriptions. Just started to see this thing crop up every single time. Essential requirement, educated to degree level or equivalent. And you start thinking, well, why? What does a graduate bring to this that no one else could possibly offer? And I think, as is quite often the case on Twitter, I sort of angrily tweeted about it, aimed at one of the organisations, and got a reply quite quickly back from the person who'd written the advert, who turned out to be one of my old bosses, which was a bit awkward. But we had a bit of a conversation, and quite quickly he turned around and said, "You're absolutely right. This is it's just there because it's always been there. And as soon as I look at it, you think, there's absolutely no need for that. We've got to get rid of it. And it comes at a time, I think, when certainly here in the UK, we're looking a lot at diversity and inclusion within the sector, looking at who's actually working in the profession and seeing that huge groups are really underrepresented. And I don't think it's any surprise that the groups that are underrepresented in the sector are also the ones underrepresented at higher education level. And I think the more we keep asking for these unnecessary qualifications, the more we're going to keep people out of the sector.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the ads that they say, they don't say what type of degree.
No.
It's just the degree automatically makes you more qualified for this fundraising role. And obviously there aren't really fundraising degrees. I mean, or there weren't, there's some marketing degrees and things like that, but actually it's almost just like this tick box exercise.
Yeah, I think for some charities it's there because it's the easiest way of then getting it to the salary level that they need to compete. Although talking to HR and professionals across the sector, they said that's actually sort of a lazy shortcut. There are other ways you can get around that. The most common answer we've had when I've been speaking to organizations is we've always had it there. Mm. So it has literally just been copied and pasted each time they've gone out.
Well, it's true, isn't it? Because whenever anyone writes a fundraising ad, you just go and see what else is out there and you literally copy and paste it.
Well, or you find the job description from 3 years ago, the last time you advertised for that post, and use that as the starting point.
Yeah.
And I think particularly for small organisations, if they don't have dedicated HR teams, it falls on either another member of the fundraising team or sort of other people across the organisation to do that as part of a wider job. So they are looking for the quickest way to do it. But it means you get this these unnecessary requirements just keep... they just keep rolling along because no one's stopping to think about it and to think why they're there. It's that typical charity thing of thinking, well, we've always done it that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm guilty of that because it had absolutely not entered my mind. Even as someone who maybe has been affected by this, like I just thought, well, yeah, that's the way it should be. Looking at it from the other side, you know, playing God's advocate, is there a quality that graduates have that the rest of us don't have? Like, is there something, even if you have a degree in music, is there something you've garnished from that that gives you an advantage in fundraising? You know, this idea of whatever, critical thinking, or you're just smarter than other people, or what is there some benefit to it?
I absolutely think there's a benefit to it. And the whole point of the campaign isn't to say, stop employing graduates. It's more getting people to say that is just one way of learning those skills. So you're absolutely right. Through my music degree, also had to play in ensembles. So you learn teamwork and leadership skills through it. There's a lot of research. Obviously you're writing dissertations or writing reports. So there are transferable skills from that. But I think the point is to say, I don't think there's anything that either you learn on a graduate course or those soft skills that you pick up that you wouldn't be able to pick up in some other way, or that it would be impossible for you to learn in some other way. And I think that's the key thing. I think we've got so used to this sort of quite narrow-minded view of what the pathway into the profession is that we start saying, well, of course people coming in are graduates. Of course that's the way. Because that's the way a lot of the people within the sector have come in. And we lose sight of the fact, actually, you can learn communication and storytelling skills outside of university. Some of the best storytellers out there didn't go down the academic path. You can learn teamwork. You can learn leadership skills in other ways. You can learn, or you can show commitment to a course through other things than studying it on a three-year basis.
So that's the point, is like the mix, that it's not, when you're looking at it, having a degree, it is a benefit and there's something to it. But there's a mix of all these different elements based around experience, volunteering, education, all the things we list on our CV. And so what you're talking about is just not this blanket rule where if you don't have a degree, you're ruled out.
Exactly. And often it has been used as a catch-all term, if people have thought about it, to encompass some of those soft skills. But then those soft skills are listed as the next points down on the spec.
Yeah.
But in the, one of the things that really stood out for me is it's often the very first thing on a person spec. So straight away, first line on there, educated to the degree level. If either through choice or through circumstance, you've not gone down that route, are you going to read on beyond that? You know, for a lot of people not. That's a massive no entry sign right at the beginning there, saying, sorry, this job and this profession isn't for you. So we're trying to challenge organizations to just think, what are you actually asking for? What are the skills, the abilities, the qualities someone needs to be successful in that role? And be really open about that. And then let the applicants decide how best to demonstrate that they've got those. And for some people, absolutely, it will be the fact that they've studied at degree level. But other people will have different ways of being able to evidence that. And certainly some of the stories that have come out through the Non-Graduates Welcome campaign, you start realising actually the things that stop people going to university often are as much have provided those people with exactly the skills that we're looking for in fundraising, resilience, that understanding of the need for different causes and having that passion for causes.
The response there from, you know, hashtag non-graduates welcome, you talk about your boss's mind being changed pretty quickly. What has the overall response have been? Is it just been blanket agreement, or are people, do people disagree with what you're saying?
No, some people have disagreed. Some people have stuck by it and decided that they do need graduates. It's a tricky balance, sort of, because part of the campaign has been talking to people on Twitter, but a much bigger part has been emailing people and more privately contacting the people that are writing the ads and just asking, well, why do you believe this is an essential requirement?
Mm-hmm.
Pointing them towards things like the work of the Change Collective at IOF, the figures coming out of that. So some people will just completely ignore it. Some people say, no, we're going to stick with it. It's company policy. Perhaps we'll change at another point. And at the moment, we haven't said, well, at this point, we're not going to change your mind. And there are enough other people to talk to that we'll have to leave it there. But I think the majority of people do get it. The majority of people, again, come back saying, we just didn't think, yeah, we're going to reissue the job spec without that problem. Surprisingly, quite a few people who've said that the thing that clicked for them was when they realized that they didn't have a degree. I'm trying to recruit someone for a role that I now couldn't apply for.
Yeah.
And that's happened a few times.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, if you looked at some of the most successful fundraisers in the sector, I imagine there's a huge chunk of them who don't have degrees. They've got into this business early on because they can. Well, because they can what? What are the skills, I'm curious, that you think make a good fundraiser? What have you seen in your time working with lots of different fundraisers?
I think the ability to tell a story, but tell it in a simple yet compelling manner. John Lepp was on a couple of episodes again, talking about the fear of simplicity. Mm. And I think a lot of fundraisers get tied into trying to tell you everything at once. You certainly see that a lot in the arts and culture sector. So people who can really distill the need down into a passionate ask, people who can build empathy with the donors that they're speaking to, but also the beneficiaries of their work and trying to make that connection. People who are good listeners. We talk about communication skills quite a lot and almost focusing on the information that we're pushing out, but actually a much bigger thing is someone's ability to listen to the information they're receiving from donors or from potential supporters and really understand what that person is saying, really understand what they're not saying and what might be driving their motivations, their passions, their interests. And I say all of these things, yes, you can get from a degree, or certainly a degree would help you to demonstrate that, but yeah, certainly not the only way.
Yeah, that's fair. In terms of
the top skills for a fundraiser.
Yeah, I mean, it always seems to come down to like communication and personal skills. If you if people, I mean, I'm cautious about saying this, but if people like you or if people respond to you, then you're probably going to be pretty good at asking for money.
Mm.
In terms of job ads, there's obviously a few other things which cause problems I've seen raised. Like one of the other things that did annoy me that I wasn't aware of, things like not having a salary on the job ad, so it's dependent on experience. These kind of things have an impact on who applies and the process, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's over the last couple of months, I've been trying to get a better sense of just how many job ads are including these various things, or in that case, not including the salary. So I've been looking at every job ad that's posted on the Facebook group fundraising chats. Because okay. You get a really wide mix there. And just sort of keeping record of different bits of information. So actually the number that don't include the salary, certainly on that platform, is quite small.
Yeah.
Only about 8%, which I agree is too high. But the question of experience, I think, is a really important one. And this came up when I was speaking to the chair of the charity HR group, who made, I think, a really interesting point. He said there's no longer, there's no such thing anymore as an entry-level job in fundraising. Every job now being advertised requires you to have some level of experience. And since he mentioned that, I've started looking for that in job ads as well. And he's absolutely right. I mean, I think it's about 75 jobs that have been posted on fundraising chat this month. It's only about 10 you could get away with applying without having had some experience in fundraising before. And on average, where people are asking for a set number of years, they're asking for between 2 to 3 years experience in fundraising, and often at the same level as the job you're applying for. But yeah, I think that's something that as a sector we've got to consider. What is that entry route? How do people get that first experience? Because at some point, someone's got to take that first job. And that came up, I think, in some of the IOF data recently, that most charities aren't giving people their first professional role. They're coming from somewhere else first.
That's weird. The I don't know if you're well placed to talk about this, and obviously I'm conscious I'm one white male talking to another white male. But these kind of things, they seem to have a disproportionate effect on minorities. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly in terms of graduates, the group's largely underrepresented. People from BAME communities, people from low income backgrounds, and you're absolutely right. And it was something I was quite conscious of when I started the campaign, and saying, how are people going to take this, as you say, from a white middle class man who's got a degree? Is it my place to be talking about out? And I guess my view is the problems around inclusion across the sector are so deeply ingrained. I think they fill every sort of nook and cranny of the sector. And if it's something that as a sector we're going to try and correct, it is going to take everybody to do something about it. And I think actually that often the people that need to make the change are the people in those positions of power, which, you know, sadly the whole problem at the moment is that too many are white middle-aged men or white older men.
And sadly I suppose that their voices are often heard better, so we need them to argue. I mean, in talking about degrees, for you to have a degree, it gives you a lot more credence in this argument. You know, like if you didn't have a degree, it'd be very easy to say, well, David's just pissed off because he doesn't have a degree and he can't apply for these jobs. But the fact that you have a degree, it kind of makes it seem, okay, well, maybe we should at least reflect and listen to what he's saying. So perhaps it is this level of privilege. The privilege needs to be used.
Yeah. And I think certainly the privilege in that case is the privilege of saying, well, I've got a degree, surely everyone else does too. I think people have gone through that same process. I suspect that is why I have never noticed that requirement before and how ridiculous it is, because it has never had a negative impact on me through my career. And it's only when you start looking at it at a distance, that you start thinking, actually, that's really unnecessary. And I don't, who knows? I don't know if it hadn't been for all of the work of the IOF and all of the conversation around that and the Change Collective program, whether it would have stood out at that time. And I think, as I said, we owe a huge debt of gratitude to the people working really hard on constantly getting this message across and constantly challenging organisations and challenging the sector as a whole to do better.
I think absolutely you're right. I think maybe 5 or 10 years ago, even, there might have been some people talking about this, but it wouldn't get a mainstream conversation because we just, you know, people weren't talking about this. Or, you know, again, talking as a white privileged male, none of my circles were talking about this level of diversity and this level of inclusion. And so we are seeing things with a different eye these days, I think.
I think there are still people who question whether it's a problem, though. Definitely still work to be done to get people to realize we do really need to change this.
Well, yeah, I imagine there's some pushback to you, not necessarily pushback, but as you said, some people ignore it. And I imagine, you know, people aren't going to argue publicly with you if they disagree with you because they're maybe afraid of being called out. I'm sure there's people out there who just will totally disregard this, disagree and continue. So where does that leave you? What is the next steps, or what is the future for non-grads welcome? Is this just a little side project you're doing for a while, or where does this go?
No, I don't think it's a side project, although I think it'd be great for more people to join in and challenging within their own organizations when they see job descriptions, challenging colleagues. And when I say challenge, that's not necessarily in a sort of aggressive, all-out attacking way. And I think, you know, the point in terms of people not wanting to get drawn into things, I think we quite often get defensive when someone insinuates that we're contributing to problems around diversity and inclusion. But just getting to people to think again and say, do you really mean that? Why do you think that's important? Is there a better way? And highlighting the potentially negative impact that could have. And I think the more people challenge it and the more people start thinking about it, I think it is the kind of thing that we will see start to disappear. I'm under no illusion that on its own that this is going to completely move the needle on inclusion within the sector, but it does seem like quite a small step that we can make quite easily that opens that door a little bit wider to a much more diverse range of people entering the profession.
It certainly changed, I think, some minds and some even some job ads. We've seen it change so far. So it is, you know, it isn't that thing about changing the world, but it's just kind of moving the needle a little bit for people like me who'd maybe never really reflected on it until you put it in my timeline.
Well, and that's the hope. I think that there is a sort of difference of opinion because the problem, the challenges that we're facing at the moment are so big. There's one school of thought that says it takes one body taking a massive strategic approach to fix this. I think actually it needs a large number of people chipping in and trying to change one thing. And if we can keep chipping away at some of these deeply ingrained practices that are having a harmful impact, and if we can start pushing them out, we can start challenging behaviours or accepted ways of working that are actually holding us back as a sector. I think that's going to get us to a little bit closer to where we want to be anyway.
I think that's fair. And I think the way you've gone about it is fair. Like, you strike me as a very polite, gentle person. You know, you haven't aggressively called people out on it. And I think that's important. What you're saying is, like, you're not asking people to, or you're not suggesting people are aggressive and like calling people out, like, what the fuck are you doing? Because that gets people's back up. But it's just simply that question is, you know, hey, why are we doing this again? Or why is this line in here? Do you mind me asking? And actually, sometimes that's all it takes is for people to reflect and realize they don't have an answer to it.
Yeah, I mean, it did take me a little while to to find a way of wedding, particularly on Twitter, where the character limit means that things always have the danger of coming across as being quite blunt or being quite,
yeah, quite short. And also everything always seems these days like, get him, you know, because it's like public, it's like, let's get him. So you have to be careful on that.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons I prefer the email route, because it's... you can spend a bit more time in, but the challenge with that is it's completely private. And I think the reason that the campaign sort of took off so much at the beginning was the very public nature of it being on Twitter, that people could join that conversation. So it has taken a balance, and yeah, taking a little while to get the tone right, because while I am normally quite polite and well mannered and considered, I've been a few times where it's got a little bit close, and you suddenly realise actually that doesn't help.
Yeah,
and whether that's personal frustration or just not quite judging things right,
or it's just Twitter. I mean, someone described Twitter before as it's the two old men in the Muppets who are shouting things from the balcony, and it's like that's what it is. Sometimes you're sitting in front of your computer and you feel like you have to be a bit ruder. But no, I think you've struck a nice balance, and it's been interesting to watch the journey so far.
Oh, thank you. Well, fingers crossed. Yeah, there's still a long way to go, and I think, but the more people are thinking about it, the more people are challenging it. I think we can. Mm-hmm. I think we can get rid of it, because it's not adding any value, and actually it's causing more harm. And at a time where I think most organisations are really struggling to recruit in fundraising, amounts blocking off about 70% of the population on a completely made up criteria wow. Doesn't seem like the most sensible route. It's the equivalent of saying, on a numbers basis, it's the equivalent of saying nobody with dark hair is allowed to apply for this role.
Yeah, that's good. If people want to follow this, if people want to see a bit more from it, where do they find you?
So you can follow the campaign on Twitter at nongradswelcome, and the hashtag nongraduateswelcome. And people have been sharing their experiences of entering the profession as a non-graduate, but also using that to challenge organisations and challenge job descriptions. I also tweet about it occasionally in a personal capacity. So I'm at David Burgess FR. There is a website coming at some point with manifesto and FAQs. I've been trying to get as many different viewpoints and perspectives from people across the sector, so trying to get that all into a sort of final state that's taking a little bit longer than planned. But as soon as that's up, we'll put the address on the Twitter account as well.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Yeah, David Burgess, great person to follow on Twitter. Great person to know. And absolutely check out nongradswelcome on Twitter, or hashtag nongraduateswelcome. I'll put a link in the description of this as well. And then before I let you go, obviously I have to ask, and everyone wants to know, is what instrument are you playing? If you have a music degree, what's your scene?
So I'm a trumpet player.
Ah, do you know, when I looked at you, I was like, this is definitely a brass instrument, but I wasn't.
Yeah,
and
so
you're amazing.
I was just about to say, I don't want to blow my own trumpet. I almost stopped myself. Not anymore. There's a reason I'm a fundraiser now and not sat on stage with Phil or anyone like that. I still play for fun. I play in an orchestra in London.
Yeah,
and do bits and pieces.
That's cool. And anything else? Do you play anything else? Do you write music? Do you just do it for fun?
I used to. So a lot of my music degree was in writing music.
Yeah,
and I haven't written a note since I graduated. I sort of live in my brother's shadow. So he is a professional musician.
Oh yeah,
I've lived vicariously through him. But yeah, no, it's nice being able to do it without the pressure of having to make a living out of it.
So, yeah, that's cool. Do you have a particular trumpet solo that you want me to play you out on this podcast? Favorite piece of music, and we can fade into it now.
which we go for. You could do Fanfare for the Common Man. That's quite cool.
Cool. I'll do it. All right. David, listen, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me. Really interesting stuff. And hopefully we can chat again in the near future.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Cheers, Simon.
Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free. So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com. Register now. Join us. It will be accessible, it will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.